We all love mob movies. Scarface, The Godfather, the list goes on and on. But there's one movie that speaks to me above all others. Donnie Brasco starring Johnny Depp. In season one of Deep Cover, we discovered the real story behind Donnie's time undercover with the New York Mafia and what it was like spending 6 years with some of the wildest wise guys you'll ever come across. I'm your host, Leo Rossi, and I've spent my life behind and in front of the cameras, creating stories about the mob. This season, we're going even deeper into the Donnie Brasco story. We'll learn more about the man behind the persona, Joe Pistone, and his time as the most decorated undercover agent in FBI history.
Welcome back to Deep Cover. The real Donnie Brasco. The five families of New York were some of the meanest and gruesome crime families in this side of the Atlantic. But if you thought the American Mafia was full of cold-blooded killers, wait until you hear about how they do it in the old country. This week, Leo and Joe get into the Maxi trial and tell you just exactly how far the Sicilian Mafia will go to escape justice.
Hello, everybody. This is Leo Rossi with Joe Pistone. It's Deep Cover, the real Donnie Brasco. And we are so happy to be in our second season. We've got a lot of surprises for you. Without further ado, let's rock on through. How you doing, Joe?
Okay, Leo, how are you today? Everything going good?
No, it's actually a very shitty day. It's a good day today.
You got out of bed today, didn't you?
You know, that's the point that sometimes I overlook. You're absolutely right.
It's a great day.
I thought we'd just for shits and giggles start out a little light. During our first season and even in our first three episodes, what we've had is nicknames, and some of them you can't make up. But let's just for just your crew, Lefty Two Guns Ruggiero. Why was he called that? How did he get that nickname?
He told me whenever he went out on a hit, he liked to take two guns.
As a backup. One as a backup.
One as a backup.
Well, because you know what? You did mention that you were pretty well astounded that the guns they used were old. They weren't state of the art.
Oh, my God. When Sonny Black gave me the contract to whack Bruno, he gave me a .38 pistol that I would have been afraid to fire. I mean, it was so old, and a lot of it was rusted out. Not rusted out, but, you know, had rust spots on it. Man, I would rather have stabbed him than shot him. Would have been safer for me.
All right. Well, we got to that nickname. Now, Sonny Black was your capo, and then there was a Sonny Red.
Right.
Why Sonny Black and Sonny Red?
Well, Sonny Red had reddish hair, and Sonny Black dyed his hair black. He had some gray around the sides, but he kept it black. So Sonny Black, because that's what he did.
We're getting some great answers here.
At the time when I first went in, I got into the Bananos, the underboss was Nicky Glasses, because his glasses were like Coke bottles. So they called him Nicky Glasses.
This all makes sense to me. This makes sense to me.
Leo, it ain't rocket science.
But here, Joe, it can get confusing. Here, there was a guy, he wasn't with your crew, and his name was Fat Dom, and the guy weighed 140 pounds. Now, we had the guy in Philly, Skinny Joey Merlino, and he really was skinny.
Yeah, and he weighed about 40 pounds.
Exactly, you know. And then we have Johnny Spaghetti. You didn't even know how he got that name.
That one baffled me.
Yes.
I said, Johnny, how'd you get that name? He said, I don't know, Donnie. Just one day they call me Spaghetti. Then we had a guy in the crew, Jimmy Legs. Why do you think they called him Jimmy Legs?
He had long legs.
He had long legs. Jimmy was about 6'2", maybe 6'3", but he was all legs, Jimmy Legs.
Well, there was something that it was in one of your books. I don't know which one. He's got eight books out, team. Eight books. And there was a guy mentioned named Johnny Sausage. And his real name was John Borbato. He was 5'7", 250 pounds. But the kicker here,
He was uncle to Nancy Sinatra.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a good one. Then here, this guy was around when you were around. He's since died in prison. Gaspipe Caso was a homicidal maniac that either he killed or had killed over 100 guys. And Gaspipe. Why? His father's nickname was Leadpipe. That's a nice family tree, isn't it? Gaspipe, Leadpipe. Jeez.
Does that give you a clue what they like to do to guys that they didn't like?
Yeah, yeah. It's passed down generation to generation. Now, he was a boss, this guy I mentioned it now. Tony Ducks Corallo. Now, you know how the Ducks came into being?
I know, but you tell the audience.
Oh, okay. Because of it wasn't because he was a connoisseur of duck. No. It's because he avoided or ducked subpoenas.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the way he got his name. And the last one, Anthony Quack Quack Ruggiero. No relation to Lefty. And the Quack Quack was because he talked all the time on the phone, right?
He talked, couldn't shut up.
And that actually was the way it was his doom, huh?
They got an abundance of information off his wiretaps.
Yeah. And, you know, I remember, because you pointed out, he was using his daughter's princess phone. He thought he'd be cute, huh? They still got him.
A lot of them thought if they used a princess phone, nobody could tap it because it was his daughter's, you know? He didn't know that you tapped line coming into the house. I mean, that, you know, that's when they had, you know, most people had landlines, right? He thought the princess phone, nothing's going to be picked up on that.
Yeah, not rocket science, right, with these guys. All right. We talked about the Bonanno trial, the first real use of the RICO. And then we talked about the Pizza Connection trial, and that was an international trial. And now we're into the commission trial, which is the big bosses here in the United States, especially the five families in New York. Now, there is one thing, Joe. This does show the difference of Sicily and here. They had a trial called the Maxi trial in Sicily, where they were going after 50, 60 mafia heads, and they actually built, and we mentioned it, a jail cell in the courtroom. Is that correct?
Yes, they built the jail cell in the courtroom, and they had them all in there, and they all got tried at the same time. They were all in the courtroom, enclosed in a cell.
Yeah, but these guys could shout out, couldn't they? If they wanted to, they could just, yeah.
I understand. I mean, I wasn't there, but I understand it was like a three-ring circus with all the comments that the gangsters were making. But that's how they do things over there, you know, and they get it. Sometimes they get it right. You know, there was no, they did have process due because they were on trial, even though they all got convicted.
You know, now there's something that I know is very touchy to you. They don't play over there. They don't play. And by that, I mean the prosecutor. And I'm not sure if you knew him personally, Giovanni Falcone.
Yes, I did know him personally. Yes,
you
I
did.
I was in his company a couple times.
Could you tell everybody out there how they got back at him?
Well, first of all, Giovanni Falcone was the mafia prosecutor, and he was one hell of a person, believed that the mafia was destroying Italy and Sicily. See, over there, you know, the prosecutors do a lot of the investigations with the police, and he had 24-hour guard on him, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Him and his family were protected. And things were getting a little too hot for the mafia because of Judge Falcone. So what they did was they found out a route that he was taking with his family, and they were going somewhere, and they mined the road. So when it got to a certain point, they just exploded the bombs and blew up the judge's car and his bodyguard's car. And killed the judge. So, yeah, they don't fool around over there. That was one of the bones of contention that Sonny Black told me and Lefty told me with the Sicilians is they had no problem killing police officers, judges, where, you know, the American mafia, normally they knew that, you know, you couldn't get away with just outright assassinating a police officer or a judge. That brought a lot of friction between the Sicilians and the American mafia. And then they actually, a couple months later, they did the same thing. Judge Borsellino that took over for Judge Falcone. They killed him.
Paolo Borsellino, right? Yeah, Paolo. Yep. Yeah.
Yep, they killed him.
2 months later in the same position.
As Judge Falcone.
Joe, you said Judge Falcone. Did you say his wife was in the car too or no?
I think she was, yeah, yeah.
This is insane. It's not even the Wild West. They are animals. They are total animals, and they don't care who they kill.
No, not at all. Not at all. And even the officers that are on a protection detail, they go after their families. I mean, they go right down the line, the Sicilians. They go right down the line.
Life's pretty cheap, huh? Wow. Yeah, I can't defend that, and I'm of Sicilian heritage. There's nothing to say. You just can't say anything. A guy's doing his job. He's on the side of the law. He's a top-notch prosecutor. He's well-respected, and he and his wife blown into smithereens. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you do have a friend. You do have one friend, now, you know, an investigative journalist.
Besides you?
Yes, I'm an army of one, Joe. No. Roberto Saviani.
Right.
Really wonderful investigative journalist. And he did what movie? Gomorrah?
He wrote the book Gomorrah.
Oh, then they did a movie based on it.
Yeah, about the mafia in Naples. And he's written several books about the mafia and how it corrupts.
Mentioned real names? Did he mention real names?
Oh, almost definitely did. Yeah, yeah. And so he has a 24-hour guard on him because they got a hit out on him. And I met him. I was in Rome 2 years ago. It's funny. I was in Rome 2 years ago. We went out to dinner and, you know, he's got like 10 bodyguards with him wherever he goes. And, I mean, these are cabinieri. These are, you know, provided by the Italian government. And you go out to a night, you know, we go out to a restaurant and we're at one table and the bodyguards are on the table surrounded us.
I would get agita. For you people out there that aren't Italian, agita is acid in the stomach. I would get a big case of that. All right. So let's, we understand that they don't have any rules there. You know, as a matter of fact, a lot of things I read about the cartels, it's almost like they took their cue from the Sicilian mafia because they kill government officials, prosecutors, everything.
Yeah, the cartels do the same thing. You know, they might be a little more vicious, but, you know, the Italians, they're right up there with them. I guess they just don't like anybody infringing on their territory.
Well, that leads me to this. And we've had listeners write in and everything. Leo, could you deal with the contract on Joe's head? From the mafia bosses, could you go in more depth? You know, $500,000 is a lot of money on an open contract. And I listen to what you say. You know, you were secure with your mini guard of FBI agents. And then you had to leave and go to wherever you were staying with your family. Joe, I mean, how? You must have been looking in the rearview mirror all the time. Did you check under your car for bombs? I mean, because when somebody wants to find you, not just you, anybody, they usually can. But they didn't with you. Tell me.
Well, Leo, what you do is, you know, you never have a set routine. You don't form habits on what you do. When I would go visit my family, I'd go to maybe two or three cities before I'd get home, before I'd get to where I, you know, my family was. So you take a lot of precautions like that. And that's why we're good at what we do, you know, as far as staying safe. But there's always an outside chance that somebody sees you. I mean, I know I was in a drugstore one time. I look in the next aisle, and there's one of the wise guys that I knew from the day. You know, I was on a vacation, and it wasn't anywhere where I thought that these guys would go on vacation. But I went home, and we packed up and went to another city for our vacation.
Wow. How long did that go on, Joe? Because when was the contract either rescinded or how long?
Well, Leo, I have never been told that the contract has been rescinded.
I wish you would have told me that before. Now you tell me? Now you tell me after 22 years we've been hanging out? I thought it was rescinded.
No, nobody's ever told me that.
Oh.
And nobody's ever told any of my people in the FBI that keep tabs on what's going on and let me know what's going on. So I've never gotten the official word from anybody that the contract has been rescinded.
Wow.
Now, Leo, do I think anybody is getting up every day looking, say, I'm going out looking for Joe? First of all, I don't think today the mob's going to give anybody $500,000. And if it is somebody, to me, it's not going to be a legitimate gangster. You know, it's going to be a cowboy. Somebody that thinks, hey, if I whack Donnie Brasco, I'm going to make a name for myself. Well, I think that's 100% wrong. You ain't going to make a name for yourself. You're going to be a marked man. And so are your compadres.
Look, that's how much they knew you could hurt them. And you did hurt them that much. 200 and how many people put away, put behind bars?
Every trial, you know, that we had input into and everything, it's over 200, yeah.
Rudy Giuliani, who you have a lot of respect for, and you said he was very sharp. I mean, the guy, he's done some wonderful things, cleaned up New York, was right there in 9/11. You know, it was the leading force. With Rudy, he said something which you have to enlighten me, because you knew Bill Bonanno, the son of Joe Bonanno, who was for a long time the head of the Bonanno family. And then he went missing, and then he came back, and then he was in retirement in Arizona. Okay? Am I correct up to now?
That's correct.
Okay. So now he writes a book called Honor Thy Father, and he admits in the book that there is a commission in the mafia, commission of bosses throughout the country.
Yes, but you know, you read his book, and the way he puts it is that all these people were immigrants from the other side, from Sicily, from the mainland, and when they came to America, they had to stick together. And they were a family. So that's the family that he's referring to. The bosses were like the father, you know. So he simplifies everything. You know, he doesn't come right out and tell you that we're corrupt, that we're gangsters, that we're, you know, we're thieves, we're crooks. It's all academic that he's in spouting about the mafia. But yeah, he did. And then Rudy was smart enough to use it against him at the trials. Yeah.
Yes. They said Rudy's quote was, let me see if I see it right here. If he can write about it, I can indict about it.
I can indict about it. Yeah. I'll tell you, Rudy was sharp. I spent a lot of hours and with him, and got nothing but respect for him as a prosecutor. Rudy was, as we say, a stand-up guy.
Well, I guess it goes under the title of gallows humor. But you and Rudy used to break each other's balls to see who had the biggest contract out on him, and you won?
Yeah, I won. I had 500, and I think Rudy only had, 50 maybe. But, you know.
That's gallows humor.
He had a target on him. He had a target on him.
Deep Cover will be right back after this short message. And we're back with Deep Cover.
You knew Bill Bonanno, he's passed away. But do you think, because Joe Bonanno was put out to pasture, do you think the book had a little bit of revenge in it too? Or was it just a money deal? He just wanted the money.
I think it had a little bit of revenge, because I think from what I can gather, he was given, you know, an ultimatum, you know, either you retire or we're going to whack you. So, you know, he took the retirement package. And don't forget, he was one of the originators, you know. I mean, he went back a long way.
Yeah.
He was one of the originators of the whole mafia concept, the whole La Cosa Nostra concept in the United States. I think it was, you know, kind of a payback. Yeah.
When he went away, Joe.
You mean when he disappeared? I think that kind of was on his own.
Yeah, he knew it was getting too hot. So he,
he did.
That's good.
Yeah.
All right. So that's, we want to mention here, and we've talked about it a little bit, but there were three components: the legal component, your testimony, and then we mentioned wiretaps. And your buddy, Jimmy Kallstrom, who actually worked his way up to what? Assistant head of the FBI?
Yeah. Well, he was assistant director of the New York office. He was a genius when it came to the wiretap and all the technical stuff.
That alone puts him in the Hall of Fame.
And another stand-up guy.
All right. So we're 2 for 2 in this operation, and you're a stand-up guy. So it was 3 for 3. That's 1,000 batting average. Bye-bye, Mafia. All right. But when you get guys like that around you, it's almost like they spur you on to do things. You know, it's like, if you go out to the basketball court and you were a high school basketball star and everything, if you go out to the court and you play with guys that aren't that good, somehow your game goes down a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
When you play with guys that are as good as you or better, your game gets better.
Your game has to get better, exactly.
Yeah. And the one thing that I heard this, and all the tapes that he did on this investigation, Jimmy Kallstrom, and his team, if you played them nonstop, they would play for 5.5 years.
Yeah.
How do you sort through that stuff? Man.
Well, you know, I mean, they're overhears from different locations. Mm. But we had a lot of wires up.
Well, it's the results are the proof of the pudding. Now, on the commission trials, I guess in the FBI, you have an operation. It's called Operation So-and-So.
Yeah, every operation has a name, has a code name.
And this for the commission trials was Operation G-E-N-U-S. How do you say that?
Genus.
Operation, yeah. So
with my Patterson knowledge of the English language, you know.
Okay, but I'll say it like he said, a genus, which is pretty fancy. But it says here, a class of things that have common characteristics, which can be divided into subordinate kinds. Oh,
all right.
Boy,
now, Leo. Oh. Let's use your Villanova University education.
Oh, God.
And explain that, please.
All right. A class of things that have a common characteristic. So,
all right. Would that be the mafia? The people in the mafia?
It could be people with a limp, but no. Okay. I get it. It's people in the mafia. That's the class that has the characteristics, which can be divided into subordinate kinds. All right, let me take you challenge me here. That means boss, underboss, conciliary, capo, crew, associates. Yes?
That's how I would take it into the family.
Okay. So, see Villanova did have some merit.
That 4 years at Villanova, even though you got banged around on a football field.
Yes, that's it. All right. So there was something that started back in the Galante thing, and it will hopefully shed light on a word that is another challenge to me. On the Galante hit, you were going to discuss that in the trial, but this judge, Pierre Leval, he wouldn't accept your testimony because?
Only I couldn't testify against what I knew about Galante getting hit because he was the head of the family at the time, because it involved the predicate crimes that these guys were charged with.
How could they be that picayune about this thing? Joe, you're in a gigantic trial. There's so much at stake. And this guy's going to pull like something outrageous like that?
That was his ruling on the testimony. You know, you have to kind of let them know what you're going to testify to. Then they have hearings and...
Okay. All right. They got rules. I get it. Well, where did this quote come out of? It was in your book, Unfinished Business, I believe. The judge, Pierre Laval, it says, Pierre pissed on Pistone.
That was in the newspapers.
Oh, that was a columnist. Okay.
That was a columnist. Yeah. You know, that was one of those jokesters. I don't remember which columnist, but that was in... I don't know if it was the Post or the Daily News.
Okay, but it's got a ring to it. You got to admit.
That's all right, Leo. We got conviction, so it didn't make any difference. we got convictions. That's all that mattered.
All right. Now here is stuff that I keep learning. Before you were in that deep cover operation, the FBI avoided narcotics crimes.
Yeah, because you know we really didn't have jurisdiction, you know, because you had the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs, and then they got the Drug Enforcement Agency, same agency, they just changed the name, and they had the jurisdiction over drugs.
But President Reagan, right? President Reagan, it says in 1982, he reversed the FBI's longstanding policy of avoiding narcotics investigations.
Yeah, then we got into it. They put us into it too, the FBI. Yeah.
Isn't that a coincidence? The same time you were doing it, the investigation? Unbelievable.
Well, you know, DEA is a great agency, but they're small. I mean, I don't know if they have 5,000 agents. I mean, worldwide, maybe not even 5,000 worldwide. I mean, we got 20-some thousand agents worldwide, so
wow,
you got to go with the numbers, you know? They do a hell of a job. You know, it made sense to give us some jurisdiction, too, you know?
Well, you guys delivered.
Yeah, well, so did they. They were very instrumental in the pizza case as far as an investigative agency working with us. We worked together. U.S. Customs was brought in. They had a piece of it. So everybody had a piece and everybody did a good job. FBI was the lead agency, but DEA did a hell of a job. So did, you know, the other agencies that were brought in.
You know, the one thing that did come out in the research was J. Edgar Hoover was convinced that narcotics could be a corrupting influence on his agents. You don't buy that, do you?
Well, I think there's some validity in that. Because there's so much money involved. I mean, look, fortunately, has the FBI had some corruption regarding drugs and agents? Yeah. Has DEA? Yeah. Has Customs? Yeah. Every agency that's involved in working drugs has, because there's so much money in it.
Yeah, but look at all the good you guys did.
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course. I mean, look, the percentage is zip. I mean, you know, minuscule when you figure out how many cases we've worked. And when I say we, I'm talking about FBI, DEA, Customs.
Yeah.
How many cases are worked? How many agents are assigned to these cases? So the corruption is a speck on the horizon.
Understood.
Yeah, yeah.
Joe, the results of that commission trial, and I don't think there's anybody that can deny it, with your work, Rudy Giuliani's, a guy named Jimmy Kallstrom, and all the lawyers, really made the mafia not the powerful organization that it was. Not at all. So you are part and parcel of the team that did that. So I think I will be within my realm of being the host to say Pistone pissed on the mafia.
I agree with that.
I thought you would.
Because of our convictions? Exactly.
Next time on Deep Cover, Leo and Joe sit down for an extended interview with Michael Francesi. Thanks to our producer, Monique Nethington, sound designer, Casey Franco, and executive producers, Maddie Stout and Rudy Salo, for putting this episode together. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for more Deep Cover updates, plus exclusive photos and content.